This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. Now, oftentimes, one of the reasons people don't invest is out of fear because they think it's too complicated. On top of that, investors themselves who are already invested face general anxieties, concern over the money they've invested. Now, one way of managing both these situations is by building an investment framework, which is exactly what we're going to explore today with Yap Ming Hui, Managing Director and Licensed Financial Planner with Whitman Independent Advisors. Ming Hui, welcome back to Ringgit and Cents.
Good morning. Nice talking to you again.
So when we look at investments, financial goals are key to planning, key to investment as well, right? Because it's the motivations around why you're putting your money in the market. Mm. I'm hoping you can start off this conversation by talking a little bit about the differences between actually investing and speculating. Because I think we've seen quite a lot of that over the last few months in our own Bursa Malaysia.
Yeah. So investing is about investing into something that will something solid that will rise in the long term. Okay, and the certainty of the rise, the certainty of making money is almost certain. Now, whereby in speculating, you are putting money to make a gain in short term. So you try to guess whether this investment will go up or whether it will go down. And in a way, you are trying to bet. And to bet on something to go up to or to come down in short term is always very hard. And the result is always very uncertain, and it all depends on luck. So today, what I hope to share, like what you mentioned just now, Roshan, is to share a framework of to guide how investor can invest their money with a peace of mind.
So let's get into that framework then. Mm. What are some of the key things to that we need to build a framework for ourselves?
Yes. You see, of course, I want to refer to Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett said that to invest successfully over a lifetime, it does not require a very high IQ, unusual business insight, or even inside information. What needed is a sound intellectual framework for making decisions and the ability to keep emotion from corroding the framework. So you do not want the emotion to affect you to buy or to sell the unnecessary thing. So without a sound intellectual framework, you have no reference to make good decision. And then you are very easily influenced by your emotion and expose yourself to unnecessary risk. Okay, so over the past 20 years, I've been practicing for the past 20 years, we have developed something called a holistic investing planning model, and we have been advising clients using that model. So today, I intend to share a few points on that model. The number one point in that holistic model is that we need to set a reasonable investment return. Okay, the keyword here is reasonable. So in a crisis, some people is very fearful. Some people is very exciting, very excited. So, but if you were to aim for a maximum high return, that is very dangerous. But at the same time, if you don't do anything, you just put your money in the bank, that is also wrong. Why? Because when you try to maximize the return or you aim for 100%, 200% return, you may expose yourself to high risk and lose money. Okay? But when you put money in a bank, and as you know now, the interest rate is so low, then you may be losing your money to inflation rate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the right path is a middle path. The idea is to capture this lifetime opportunity in line with your financial plan, in line with your financial goals, okay? At the same time, practice strong risk management, okay? So by doing so, you increase your chance to achieve your investment return with a peace of mind.
Let's bring some numbers into it. How do you define a reasonable return? Because, I mean, in a market like we're seeing right now,
yes,
where you've got some stocks that are in the hundreds of percent in terms of their return to
yes.
date or even over the last year. So how do I make sense of this? How do I determine what a reasonable return is for me?
Yeah. So that's why everyone, like what you say just now, when we invest with the purpose of achieving certain life goals in our life. Say, for example, some people plan for their retirement. Some people accumulate funds to fund their children's tertiary education. So we need to know that, so that's why to identify what is a reasonable return, one must find out what is his own financial freedom target return.
Right.
You know, which is what return that will be able to help him to grow his wealth, to achieve all the financial goals that he got in his life. Now, then how do you do that? So basically to do that is to do a holistic financial plan to find out what is your financial freedom target return. So this return could be, for some people, 5% per annum. Some people maybe 10% per annum. Some people maybe say 8% per annum. So for that matter, if you do not know how to do a financial plan for yourself, you can consult a licensed financial planner, or you can go to the DIY kind of app, you know, like iWealth, to produce your own holistic financial plan. So from that holistic financial plan, you will be able to know what kind of return you should target for. Say that, for example, for me, I know that my financial freedom target return is about 8%. So for that matter, in this crisis, though their stock may give 100%, maybe 200% return, but to me, if I can hit 10 to 30% return for this crisis, that'll be good enough.
So it's about context and it's about your financial goals, right? I think this is very, very important to emphasize. So if you, let's say you're talking about your retirement goals or your financial freedom goals.
Yes.
Your growth rate that you want, your return may be higher than, say, an education fund or a self-insurance fund. It really depends on what type of goals you're looking at. Or even if they had a wedding fund, you wouldn't be looking at growth so much as you would be looking for stability of the return, right? Now, when we take a look at all these different, when we take a look at returns, when we take a look at investing and the financial goals, another thing that's very important to pay attention to is that, you know, in the long term or even the short term, we don't ever want to be forced to divest out of our positions because of cash flow needs, right? I think this is one of your points as well in your framework.
Yes.
So in your view, maybe you could take us through how we optimize our own cash flow management for to hold and to basically ensure that we never have to sell because we need cash.
Yes. That's why in the current environment whereby there's a lot of good bargain, that is very exciting. But we must hold your horse, do some preparation before you start investing your money. So this is where cash flow management comes into the picture. Because in global recession, if you have too little cash, you may face some cash flow problem. No? You may have pay cut, you may be out of job. Okay? But if you keep too much cash, chances are interest rate is low and then you'll be depleted by inflation. Okay? So it's very important to prepare a cash flow management statement. Okay? So based on the current environment, to be on the safe side, I would suggest one to provide for 1 year, 12 months of lifestyle funding for cash reserve. So this lifestyle funding includes living expenses, vacation expenses, loan installment, insurance premium payment. Okay, if you have got like major children tertiary education during these 3 years, it's important for you to provide that as well. So for example, if like 1 month you need 5,000, 12 months will be like 60,000. And if you have a son or daughter that you want to provide tertiary education during just 3 years, you add that, then it becomes 160,000 to become your cash reserve. And for retiree, you need to be a bit more conservative to protect your asset. You need to provide 3 years of lifestyle funding. Yeah.
So it's very important to note here that when you say lifestyle funding, you're basically meaning any amount of cash flow that is going to exit your pocket over the next 1 year.
Yes.
Or in the case of if you got kids, then you want to be prepared for those 3 years of education as well, just in case anything happens. Because we've seen it. We've seen job losses. We've seen income cuts over the last few months. And these are all, this is the time where, you know, the time to create a buffer fund is not when you're in a crisis, but before. And so this is, I think, a lesson that we all need to learn going forward. You may not be able to do it now, but hopefully we all learn this going forward.
So the idea is to build a defense before you go off on offensive move.
right? And when you have this money separated aside, then you don't have to worry about the returns in the market or how the stock market is doing or how your investments in general are doing, because you're doing that for the long term and your cash reserves in the short term are managed. Now, when we talk about defensive, diversification is a very important point there. And we're going to talk about diversification in just a little bit. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. This morning, joining me on the show is Yap Ming Hui, Managing Director and Licensed Financial Planner of Whitman Independent Advisors. And what we're talking about today is building a framework to invest successfully. Now, Ming Hui, we talked about what's a reasonable return, how to optimize cash flow so that we don't ever have to sell our stock or our investment because of a cash flow issue. Now, I want to talk about diversification. Yes. This is something that we always talk about when we talk about investment, but it's easier said than done, right? Because it's quite complicated, especially if you have limited cash on hand in your investment. To you, what's the right way to diversify?
Okay, this is very interesting subject, like what you say. First, we need to know, if we were to invest into one asset class or one single stock, the volatility is very high. You know, at one point, you can be doing very well, but on another point, you could be losing 30-40%. So that's the whole idea why we want to put a few different asset classes together so that we can reduce the volatility. Now, the truth of investing is that we all need to know there is no one perfect investment in this world. No, despite the fact that during this MCO, there are so many self-proclaimed investment guru. So there are property guru, there are share investing guru, and they say that what they have got to offer is a perfect investment and you can get rich quick. Now, that is provided that you do not want to care about the risk that may deplete your capital. So, however, if you want to achieve financial freedom steadily and with minimum risk, you must diversify your asset class. Now, we need to know that different asset class has got its own strengths and weaknesses. Okay? For example, property give you good capital gain and rental income. Okay? But it's not liquid. Now, you have got share. Share good yield give you good capital gain, but it's highly volatile and require very close attention. And cash is steady. It give you interest income, but it can't beat inflation. So the idea of this diversification is to make sure that you're able to adopt a holistic multiple asset class investing to use the strength of one asset class to neutralize the weakness of another asset class. So by doing so, you can reduce your chance of losing money and you can enhance your investment return. So that's why, what you say just now, investing can be not stressful. Investing can be not so anxious if you are able to diversify your asset class. And my suggestion is that one should have at least six different asset class into the portfolio for you to reduce the volatility.
So it's essentially buying different asset classes that have different correlation, right? That's the key here. So if in this situation we're seeing tech stocks boom, right? But on the other side, we're seeing hospitality players in Malaysia and globally all hit very hard. If you had a diverse portfolio, you would have a bit of both. And I guess the hope here is that in the longer term, you get a reasonable rate like we talked earlier, right? A reasonable return over the long term. And that's what we want. It's really basing it again on our financial goals. You know, one way of getting diversification automatically through funds or ETFs. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say like going through to invest through stock is very difficult to achieve diversification because there are so many different counters that you need to look at. And a lot of time it's very difficult for you to cater for overseas stock or US stocks. So using ETF is a good vehicle for you to capture the US stock market, to capture tech sector effectively. But we need to be mindful. ETF may perform well in certain developed countries where the market is very efficient. But whereby human fund manager under unit trust can perform better in certain countries like maybe China, Malaysia, whereby the market may not be efficient. So, but the key point is that both they are good vehicle for you to diversify your asset classes.
Yeah, it's important to note that when you take a look at ETFs, liquidity of those ETFs is very, very important, right? The size of those different ETFs that are listed, and some of them are not available in Malaysia right now. And that's why I think we see a stronger, that's why you have the option of funds, unit trust funds, whether they are trackers or actively managed funds. These are all different options you have. But essentially what you're looking at is that diversification, looking at the geographies, looking at the asset classes, looking at the different sizes of essentially any way you can diversify. That's where you want to look at.
Yes.
With the disruption from the pandemic, what we're seeing right now is, like, as I mentioned, you know, some legacy businesses like hospitality stocks, they're trading at steep discounts in Malaysia and globally. But, you know, a stock isn't a good possible investment just because it's currently cheap, right? We don't want to get stuck in a value trap. So from your view, what should we look out for when we look at quality investments amongst all the bargains out there? You know, you're looking out there, there are many stocks here, legacy names, big names that we're very used to seeing that are trading at steep discounts.
Yes.
But not all are equal, and some of them could stay like that forever. How do you think about this?
Yeah. So that's why when I advise a client, I normally advise them not to go to a very specific stock, because it's very difficult for you to achieve diversification. Guess how many stocks that you need to buy to represent Malaysia equity market? It's very challenging. No? And there are so many sectors in Malaysia to cover the area. So if I talk about asset class level, Malaysia equity, I talk about Asia-Pacific equity or global equity, each as an asset class, then what we need to do is that when we invest, we need to invest in quality investment. I must say, now cheap is not good enough. You need to consider another three criteria. Number one, whether the particular investment that you are looking at is regulated by authorities or not. So, of course, since we are Malaysian, it's better that the investment is regulated by Security Commission or Bank Negara Malaysia. That's number one. Number two, we need to consider about the issue of return of investment versus return on investment. Return on investment is about 10%, 12%. But many people forget to say that, say for example, some of the money game investment, they may give you, say, 2% or 5% per month. So the return on investment is good. But by the time that it go to third, fifth month or the sixth month, your capital may be just gone. So this is what I mean. There's no return of capital, no security of your capital. Now, the third thing is about best of breed. In anything that we invest, say for example, Malaysia Unit Trust Fund, there are easily 30 or 40 Malaysia equity funds from different fund houses. Unfortunately or fortunately, there are some funds perform better than others, even though they are all investing in Malaysia equity fund. So as an investor, we want to do some cherry picking to make sure that we are investing into a Malaysia equity fund that exposes us to the same risk but give us a better return. Now, I know it's a big technical, so but to do that for a layman, you can always go to some newspaper which provide a unit trust fund comparison table. From there, you can do some selection there.
And what should I be looking at when I look at that that table?
Say, for example, if you talk about Malaysia Equity Unit Trust Fund, you can look at the 40 fund there. And then for the past 3 years record, what is a performing fund?
All right, so look at the three-year track history and at the very least, right? But there should be longer track history as well, right?
Yes, of course. Of course, there are other consideration, but that is a basic consideration that you can start with.
So it's the first thing you look at. And then, of course, you've got to do more research into all of that. Now, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, we talked about some of the legacy businesses that are discounts right now. Now, let's say you own some of the auto players or some of the hospitality players in Malaysia. If you look at your portfolio now, it's probably significantly in the red. What is your view on selling underperforming assets? Because on one hand, it may recover in the long run, but that's also not a guarantee, right? Some businesses do go bankrupt.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on this as a financial planner?
Yeah. You see, we are all human and we try to invest. And to invest require not too much about your human side of it. Because as a human, we would like to avoid loss. We don't like to lose money. So when our investment is not performing well, like say some stock, you know, some counter really performing poorly, you know, Malaysian generally would like to hold it rather than selling it. Now, you see, some people say, when the investment is low, you know, in price, then I want to apply buy low and sell high. You know? So when it go lower, I should buy more. But the question is that you can't apply buy low, sell high strategy to underperforming or poor quality investment. Why? Because when you buy low, it can go even lower, and worse, it may even vanish. No?
So essentially, if a stock is, for lack of a better word, a loser, you might not want to sink more money into this asset.
Yes.
What are some of the warning signs that we should watch out for that define a poor quality investment?
I think for a poor quality investment, very importantly is to do a comparison to the peer. You know? Say, for example, if you talk about we talk about Malaysia equity. Say, for example, if you talk about a certain growth stock, not all the growth stock is the same.
Yeah.
Some growth stock has got better fundamental, has got a bigger production capability, has got a better brand. So they will perform better than another stock. No, but so another growth stock could be also in a growth category, but they maybe poor management, maybe they have got their certain quality issue, so the performance will be lagging.
So essentially, it comes down to maybe a part of that includes a peer comparison.
Yes, so peer comparison is very important because we always compare apple to apple. You cannot take a variable growth stock and compare with another, say, a technology fund or oil and gas fund. And then you say, hey, this growth of this particular stock is not as good as another oil and gas. This is totally out of context.
On that note, Ming-Wei, I'd like to thank you for joining me today on the show.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
Now, remember, with all possible investment strategies, you still have to do your own homework into the assets and the strategy, keeping your risk profile and financial goals in mind. I was speaking with Yap Ming Hui, Managing Director and Licensed Financial Planner with Whitman Independent Advisors. You've been listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Karnison for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.